Do you recall in the first lectures when the room was thronged with hopeful? We talked about polarities being transformed into ratios. The eye, which is used to seeing things, cannot see ratios. Ratios can only be seen by the mind. So when one learns to see in terms of ratios, one sees with the mind's eye. The American photographer Edward Weston, who could really see, said in one of his day books, "Composition is the strongest way of seeing." That's very hermetic. Composition is the strongest way of seeing the composition. As long as we are material-based, our sight is going to be of things, not of patterns. The worldly person does not understand that there's an ecosystem, sees things, does not see the pattern. The first stage of beginning to make the transition from seeing things to seeing patterns is being able to perceive gestalts. So that if I take this, and I show you these lines, what is that? Cat. Is there a cat there? No. The gestalt is there. All of us who use language to the extent that you're able to hear me, you already can do this. If you couldn't, you wouldn't be able to hear me. You take a tape of this lecture and you play it for 10 of your most intelligent friends and see how many can hear anything. And they can't hear it. And it isn't just a function of intelligence. There's a quality that's missing. They didn't get to the acceptance depth of absorption. That's completely different. And that takes getting used to. It's like spiritual calisthenics. And after a while, we're at the 9th week of this series. After about 9 weeks of this, you have enough of the flavor that you can begin to be mobile in this consciousness. At the end of a 2-year cycle, like my Saturday course, you can hear in between the lines of people who don't even know what they're saying, you can hear the truth. And you can walk around in this world in crowds and you can learn everything there is to know. Because there's no way that anything really that happens doesn't have a wisdom resonance to it. And that's what this treatise, that's what this discourse, that's what this Ermnon sermon, Hermeneia, is all about. That the cosmos itself is a consonance of the presencing, and when we presence God in our minds, we're at the center of the cosmos. And all of its reverberation makes sense to us. All of it. The key is to shift from polarities to ratios. The first grade of Pythagoreans were those who could hear. They were called akousmatiki. and the advanced grade were called the mathematici, those who could see with the mind's eye, because higher mathematics was always this kind of ratios, and with ratios, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, you begin to get the musical ease and you get the octave. You also get history. One of the Pythagorean fragments is geometry of history. Because geometry is the way in which the mind begins to compose. But by the time of the Hermetic treatises, 500 years of wisdom development after Pythagoras, it was no longer just a geometry, but it was raised another notch to trigonometry. And trismegistic language is trigonometric. It has energy wave functions of spheres that are operative in it. So that though a Pythagoras would speak in mystical phrases, that one would take those mystical phrases in to understand. That's only the beginning. Wisdom takes those seeds contemplatively and raises it to trigonometric dimensions of spheres, so that instead of phrases, one gets whole discourse, a whole sermon. The Gospel, according to Thomas, are little phrases of Jesus, like Pythagoras. They're like Pythagorean sayings. But the Gospel of Matthew takes a whole discourse, a whole sermon, like the Sermon on the Mount. The Gospel, according to Matthew, is a hermetic document. Its whole structure shows Jesus as a hermetic teacher, able to give a sermon like the Sermon on the Mount to that level of resonance. Incredibly capable. A dynamis and an energeia together, knit together, that literally differentially explodes to measure the cosmos. This treatise, The Key, is the third. The Mind Shepherd is the first, the Archetypal Physician, the Asclepius, the second, and the Clace, the Clevis, the Key, the third. And we'll get to the fourth near the very end of this series, which will be the Rebirth. It's like a life cycle, like a life cycle. The Mind Shepherd, like the summer solstice, high summer. And the Asclepius is like the autumnal equinox, the autumn. The Key is like the deep winter of the Via Negativa. It's like the winter solstice, a time not for building bonfires on hills, but of standing silently at night in the forest groves to feel the deep, silent quietness of the winter, of the darkness, of the night, of the sun. And the rebirth is the spring, the vernal equinox. In the Renaissance, it was called primavera, the first spring, the beginning spring. And Botticelli did a whole painting that I believe should still be in the Uffizi, primavera. That beginning is what this discourse identifies as the presencing of God, because only God can begin. It's like in the Torah, the very first word in the Torah is Bereshith. Genesis begins with the word Bereshith, which is only God's presence that can do that, can begin. And begin is not just begin, but it's always a gerund form. Bereshith means literally in the beginning. In the beginning, God made heaven and earth. The earth is without form and void. And so you can see that the very Torah begins with wisdom, with understanding how you talk truth. The key, this sermon, this discourse, the 10th book of the Corpus Hermeticum, is a high wisdom document rather than a. He says first to Asclepius, yesterday I dedicated my words to you, today I will dedicate these words to you, taught. And the first thing to know is that God the Father is of one nature with the good. Or rather, the working of God the Father is with the working of the good equal to one. The restatement is a ratio of the working of God the Father as the denominator and the working of the good as the numerator, and that equals one. Now when you say it to someone who is still worldly and still leans like a cripple on doctrines, they hear the chant, hear that the God, your Father, is one. They don't hear the mystical dimension of it. But someone who can hear it, good has seed, will hear that and will wink in their mind, yes, that is the way it is. That's its suchness. The Hermetic treatise, the discourse, the sermon, the key, says, this trigonometry of the ratio, the working of God the Father with the working of the good, equaling one, that oneness is the impress that makes existence possible. Things are real because they have the impress of the one of the ratio of God and the good together sending out the consonants. And they occur because God is always the denominator, the good is always the numerator. So you see, in the Hermetic tradition, this world is a lovely creation, not something to scrap and junk. Those who junk this world are rather demonic about it, and they need indeed to cling to political doctrines. That's the only raft they have against their own nihilism. But this sermon says nature, physis, is a term. Notice the consciousness. Nature, physis, is a term applied to birth and growth, change and movement. Birth and growth, change and movement. But God's working has to do with being free from birth and growth, change and movement. Whoa. Notice here that nature is at a right angle. Nature is, physis, is a right angle to God and to the good. God and the good are resonantly one, and nature comes in perpendicular to that oneness, to that ratio. You can write one in a ratio as 1/1. 1/1 is a Hermetic way of stating one. The abstract expressionists of the New York Art School used to ooh and ah when they would have this painting by Barrett Newman, all black with a white line down the center, and we call it one. Everyone said, gee, it's deep. But if he had put a microscopic hair line of nothingness in the center of that line of light, I would have said, my God, Mr. Newman, you sure got me. But he didn't know that. Nobody in New York seemed to know that, because they didn't have any presence. And so they went shopping for it. And all the high rises and all the low rises looked around in New York life. And they never found it. Our discourse says, with Hermes speaking to Tut and Asclepius being right there with him, that nature has to do with birth and growth, change and movement, but God's working has to do with being free from change and movement, free from this. So that nature, physis, is a line, mathematically called a vector, is a line that is real only as long as it's going. If nature ever stopped and became that, it would disappear. It is only real provisionally as long as it does move and change. So that this world is real only to the extent that it continues. We, in our physical body, are of this world as long as we continue. As long as the body processes go on, the mind processes go on, we're in this world. If they stop, we leave this world. We drop right out of the whole skillet that seems so solid, we disappear from here. Because our true nature is not of being here, but of being everywhere. And that's why this world is like a veil. It's a veil of continuous ongoing. One has defined life once as one damn thing after another. And that's pretty much it. But hidden in that is this secret vibration of divine life. And divine life is always there, even when nothing is happening, even when nothing's going on, and especially noticeable when this world is not happening. And to the extent that one can pause, at least in the 60s, talk about the presence of the pause. In the presence of the pause, one can steer the star course home. Because one can see instantly, indelibly, the way to go in the presence of the pause. Trismegistus says to Asclepius and to Tot, especially to Tot, he says, Tot, bear in mind previous teachings that I've delivered to you on divine and human working forces. Now, the term that's translated as forces here is very unfortunate. The English is very flawed here. It's not very spiritual English. The Greek term is energeia, which we would understand as energy. So look, suspend in your mind presence the previous teachings about divine human ratios and the way in which energy works. That's a much better language. That's the way the Greek reads. That's the way the Hermetic Greek of, this is 500 years after Plato, very sophisticated. It's this kind of Greek, incidentally, that you find in the Gospel of St. John. St. John's Gospel and the Hermetic Greek are the same Greek. Very dynamic, thrilling qualities of meaning emerge. Because as one says the words, the old practice was to lift the words off the page into one's voice. When you lift the words off the page into one's voice, the resonance of those words enter the body. And as one speaks those words, one's body knows that truth. Because the body must presence what the mind makes real. And if the mind makes God real, the body must presence it. Has to, needs to, does. This is how the consonance of the divine comes to earth. in exactly, specifically, this way. So that the energeia, this is Trismegistus speaking, the energeia of God working occurs to us in a form that we call will. We call it will. And this will is actually his very being. So that a short form way of saying it is that God is a spiritual decision. Not a thing, but a spiritual decision. The Greek word for the being here is actually the word for substance. It's in Greek is ousia, ousia. It means stuff, it means substance. It means that the quote stuff of God is decision making on a conscious level. That God occurs as a yes out of the via negativa of pure presencing. It's just like the epiphany that James Joyce puts into Ulysses at the end, when Molly Bloom finally realizes that love only happens when the yes is continuous. Yes, and I said yes, and it was yes, and it was all yes. Because love as a consciousness only occurs in this world when it accepts the via negativa in its affirmation, in its differential personalness. I don't know what label to put on that, but the Hermetic tradition features it. So that here, the word for will in Greek actually is thelesis, out of which we get the word telesis, action by a distance. You see Pacific Bell using that as the corporate monogram, telesis. It's the Greek word that means that something is affected by nothing touching action at a distance. How does it touch? It touched by an energy wave, not by something. If you have to move it by touching it, then you're limited to this world. But if you move by not touching, by resonance, then one is getting into the spirit. How did he say it? Faith can move mountains. It's a simple rule of the thumb way of understanding what spirit is. Faith can move mountains. The ignorant would ask, is that true? And the wise would just do it. Trismegistus says, energeia of God in telesis is his ousia, is his substance. And that all things which occur because they have this common denominator quality of the energy of God's telesis being his substance. And so things are. Their are-ness is due to that common denominator. So that existence is not due to stuff, it's due to God transforming out of presencing into being at a distance. So that Hermes Trismegistus says here, esoterically, that, quote, God's will is substantive energy in transformation. That's how you would say it today. He says, holding a hand of both love and caution to Tot and to Asclepius, he says then, very importantly, and you can always tell a spiritual document, because at the juncture where compassion must be expressed, it is. And here it is. He says, the being of all things when as yet they are not is also part of God taking care of them. That the difference between somebody who imagines God as a maker, constantly making things, is a truncated, immature version. To think that God is merely a maker of things ignores the other half of creation that's there in the space of not making, in between making, after making, and that God is there also. The being of all things when as yet they are not. That God is the being of things even when they are not. And he uses a term which can only be translated in English as such. Such is God. Such is the Father. That. So that when we experience, just as we were talking at the beginning, when we experience a calm hiatus, an articulation, a duration in which nothing particular is happening, the common denominator of everything is happening. And if it's alive in us, it will thrill to hear the nothing sing. In the Hermetic parlance, it's called the ninth, the Aeneid, the ninth. The completion of the octave is the eighth, and from the completion of the octave, one can hear the silence of the ninth and smile. Trismegistus then says, this cosmos, the whole order of the universe, this cosmos is also a father, but a father in a way of things. And these things participate in the good. Okay, we have a ratio, God and the good, one over one. The cosmos participates in this oneness. The presencing in the mind participates in this oneness. This oneness includes the things that are not. This oneness includes the things that are. And together, as a ratio, they are the one. Man alone spans that whole measured circumference of the real. So he is not just some kind of fortunate animal that has just clawed his way up to respectability. But he is the only measurer of wholeness that there is in the cosmos. Because the cosmos contains nothing else that measures wholeness except us. Our pure function is to measure wholeness, which we do to perfection. The mature being measures wholeness completely. What is our place in the ecosystem? We bring wholeness into expressive personality. And so he says, Trismegistus says, he says to Tot, he says to Asclepius, he says, sons, it's true that the cosmos is also kind of father of things. And things are good insofar as they participate in the good. But yet, also, the cosmos is not in like measure with God, the author of the good, of life in living creatures. The cosmos is to things within it as a father to his children. If we put it in some kind of a line, we would have something like God through the good yields the cosmos, and the cosmos through will yields generation and nutrition, the generative world. The Hermetic understanding was that this first arrow, the good, between God and the cosmos, he translates as creative principle. And I guess for a million times it's translated as creative principle. And that's a very poor choice of words. the Greek word has an aspirant, and then it's pronounced agenesthan. Agenesthan. With an aspirant, it can be either sagenesthai or hegenesthai. What it means is the very ignition point of generation. What we would call the divine spark. The divine spark is there because the pilot of the reel is never off. It doesn't need to be material to be on. And so Hermes will say to his sons, at this point of secret revelation, he will say, this suchness is the presence of God as it occurs purely. Because in the world, what is made, in the cosmos, what is made, in the realm of things, what is made, are magnitudes and qualities. Magnitudes and qualities. But that there are dimensions of the real that include inverse magnitudes and inverse qualities. Negative magnitudes, negative qualities, equally with those which are positive. So that when one wants to ratio the real, one has to understand that there are positive and negative magnitudes and qualities, and that the materialists, the naive, look only to this one set and think that that's it. That is why things are there. But the things are articulate precisely because of the non-things in the universe. What does Lao Tzu say in the Tao Te Ching? The usefulness of the cup is the space in it, and not the stuff of the cup. Trismegistus then says, God's will, telesis, is the very existence of all things, and the good is the highest degree of that existence, and becomes known to him who is able to see it. And then for the first time, because there is a conversation, there is a dialogue, Tot speaks. And he says, my mind's eye is almost blinded by the beautiful vision and the splendor of it all. And Hermes, right away, spiritual teacher, says, nay, the vision of the good is not due to any kind of rays. Those rays are like from things of fire. But the vision of the good shines as an incorporeal radiance. Later on, Plotinus will call it an emanation. An incorporeal radiance. I have to pause here just for a second and tell you that classic Greek theory of vision was that objects gave off little particles that came through space, and the little particles hit the eye. And it was the little particles then that impinging on the eye were translated by the mind as things. So the theory of vision had an atomic kind of material quality. And that the rays were actually little dots coming down. And so you would get the impression that the image is carried to the eye by a whole train of little dots, microscopic little dots. Little atoms. What Hermes Trismegistus is saying here, about 100 AD, he's saying, there's no fire here, there are no little dots, there's no causality. That when the mind sees in terms of vision, it sees in a way in which incorporeal radiance, more penetrating than visible light, brings immortal life into being. Just like light following little dots brings life into things, light brings life, the incorporeal radiance of God brings immortal life. And so you get this wonderful thrice greatest quality that what we see in perception is an image, but the image carries an energy of the light within it that brings us light, but hidden thrice deepest in the light is God's incorporeal radiance, which brings immortal life. So you have the image, you have life, and you have immortal life. Three levels of seeing. One is seeing in an arithmetical way, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. One is seen in a geometric way, 2, 4, 8. And the third is seen in a trigonometric function of sphericality, wholeness. What used to be called in the high Renaissance in the English language of Shakespeare, an amphitheater of the mind. Nay, the vision of the good is not due to rays, which are things of fire, but they shine as incorporeal radiance, more penetrating than visible light, full of immortal life. And she who can see in this way is released from the body as a referent anchor for meaning into full fruition, which we can attain. And Tot says that we too might attain this. And Hermes says, would that we might, my son. All we need is the mind's eye power to behold the beauty of God, and that engenders this knowledge in deep silence, which is that. There's 8 more pages to it, but I think that that's enough, and if you like, you can always consult the pamphlet. I went through the whole document. More next week. More about the mind next week.